Hi, I'm Sarah Lawson. I'm the owner of S&H Construction in Belmont, Massachusetts.
And I'm Bruce Irving. I'm a home renovation consultant and a real estate agent in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Welcome to Builder's Notebook. So, Bruce, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
I thought you might be interested in what's the most topical thing in building right now.
I am. That's why I work here at this podcast.
I thought you'd be fascinated.
Well, what do you got?
Well, there's a really interesting thing going on where the state has changed the energy building code.
Got it.
It changed it January 1st. And even though we are a long way from January 1st, the industry is trying to figure it out because it has implications for anybody who's doing a renovation or building a new house.
Okay. I was vaguely aware of this, but how do you navigate stuff like that? Does some big fat book come out or what used to be called a book but now is online?
If only. We'll get into this more when we speak to our fabulous guest who knows more about this than either of us.
Good.
And that's Ben Marshall.
Okay.
Ben Marshall is the president of Green Stamp. Mm-hmm. And Green Stamp is an insulation company, but he's also...
Oh, yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah. They're a great company, and he just has made it his business to know a lot about building envelopes. So we're lucky enough to have him here, and he will talk to us about what the new rules are and what the impacts are on you and me and people like us.
Okay.
So hi, Ben. Thanks so much for coming to talk to us.
Hi. It's nice to be here.
You say that now. No, we're kidding. I got to ask, stretch from what? We're talking about stretch. Go. What's it stretching from?
That's a great question. I hate stretching in general.
Yes, me too.
You might pull something.
So why would I ever want to stretch a code?
Yeah, so it came from way back in 2008. There was a law that was passed here in Massachusetts called the Global Warming Solutions Act.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
In which the state decided in their...
wisdom.
In their wisdom, yeah. Good choice of a word. Mm-hmm. That we should solve global warming.
Okay.
And they made it possible for towns to stretch their energy code forward towards the next upcoming energy code.
Aha.
So they could opt into that.
Does that mean that these towns could see a change coming and therefore have been moved more quickly towards it?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
So the way the energy code is written is it updates every 3 years.
Ah.
So today in Massachusetts, we're on the 2021 energy code. Hmm. But if you're interested in finding out what's coming up in the 2024 energy code, you
and
can
who
just,
isn't.
Right?
Maybe.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, it happens to be, it's good to know what's coming.
And it's published.
It's published.
Oh,
yeah.
So that's, no, I'm really glad I asked. So that means the towns, it's mostly a town-based thing or a municipality-based thing, can look into the future and say, you know what, we're going to go faster towards that.
That's how it was created originally.
Now what's happening?
Well, the easiest way to say it is that the stretch code has become more of a unified code, and it still does stretch forward towards the next code as its base code, but it has different rules altogether. It's introduced some new components to it to improve the energy efficiency of housing in the towns that are part of the stretch code.
Can you give us a concrete example?
Sure. A simple example would be that in a normal town, the non-stretch code town.
Wait,
let me ask a question, but if I may.
Yeah.
So how many towns in Massachusetts have opted into this more stringent energy code?
Currently, 95% of the towns have opted in.
Okay.
So one could argue that the normal towns are the stretch towns.
Yes.
Okay. So in one of these towns.
Right. So in one of these 95% towns, one... would have a choice to make when deciding what their upcoming project should be. The choice would be, I'm putting an addition onto my house, and I want to figure out how big do I do my addition. Mm-hmm. If I decide that I want to put a 2,000 square foot addition onto my house, a nice good size addition where there's plenty of room for my dog to have a place to sleep at night.
And a bowling alley. And
right. A nice good size addition. I've crossed over the 1,000 square foot threshold, and now in the stretch code communities, my whole house needs to be updated because it's considered in the stretch code community such a major project that you need to bring your entire house up to new construction standards.
Mm-hmm. And right. if you held it under 1,000, you'd only be required to deal with the addition itself?
Yeah, you're just dealing with the addition, and you're only looking at what the standard energy code is as one does in 100% of the towns.
Okay.
So my understanding is that when you're over that threshold, that you have a HERS rater that gets involved in the process. Can you explain what a HERS rater is?
Sure. A HERS rater is a person responsible for gathering data about the project and inputting all that data into a computer model. Mm-hmm. So the computer model can predict the future energy usage of that house. And you need the HERS rater because you need someone who's trained in understanding what the inputs should be.
So they're understanding the house, they're measuring the house, the energy performance as a whole, as opposed to measuring how much insulation's in this wall.
Exactly. And compared to, so now we're talking about the additions are now over 1,000 square feet. We're looking at the entire house. Mm-hmm. So you start looking at an older house that has a big addition to it, and the HERS rater has to look at what's in the existing walls, what's in those existing windows, how are they built, or how efficient are they, and does the performance of the overall house match up to the performance of a newly built house today?
Wow.
Or not?
Could a super well built addition drag up the average for the building?
Significantly.
As a whole?
Yes.
So you're not saddled, for example, with turning an 1820s house into something that is as intense in terms of energy performance as the rear addition, as long as the average or the aggregate?
That's a great point. Yeah. So usually an old house will still pull it down.
Yeah.
But there's some low-lying apples that are always available.
You see, I'm interested in that for sure because it's so new that we haven't gotten in any of our projects to the point where the HERS rater says, this is the best, you know, you haven't hit the number you need to hit of the combined energy performance of the house and the addition. This is the most cost-effective and hopefully not ugly, I would like to say, as a representative of beautiful houses, way to improve your HERS performance. What kinds of things are those low-lying apples, as you said?
So the lowest-lying apple that you can do on any house, whether or not you're in the middle of a renovation or not, is to make sure all of your mechanical equipment are brought into conditioned space.
So that means?
That means, let's say we have our air conditioning and our heating system up in the attic.
Yep. Yes. Like me?
Yeah. So that, you're just I hate to say pissing away, but you're pissing away your energy.
Well, that's if the insulation is underneath it.
Yes,
the floor.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what we do in that scenario is we insulate the roof line.
Yep.
And when we insulate the roof line properly, what we've done is we've done two major things. Number one, we've made the house a lot more airtight because your roof line is a vented space.
Yes.
And we get rid of all that ventilation that is bringing outdoor air in. It's really draftiness. Not the good ventilation that we want to breathe.
Right.
It's the bad sort of ventilation that's only there because we're stuck in a scenario where if we don't vent it, the roof is going to it's going to rot away.
Right.
Okay. So you get rid of the ventilation and you bring what we call the operating environment for your mechanical systems, for your ductwork and your heating and cooling system. You bring that whole temperature down to a more normal temperature. So instead of in the middle of the summertime, you walk up in your attic and you're in a schwitz. It's 150 degrees.
Right.
And you're sitting there saying, wow, I don't have to go to the gym today. This is the best.
And I can't understand why the air coming out of the ductwork that's passing through the 150 degrees
right.
is warmer than I would expect.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You're cooking your conditioned air.
So then
you
insulate it, and all of a sudden the air is – the attic – it's a – remember, you're not actively cooling the attic space.
You're just giving but it's it a
still,
break.
Right. It's still 90 degrees up there, 90 or 85 degrees instead of
okay.
That.
Yeah, it's huge, for
sure. All right, so there's a good example of a low-hanging fruit.
So I was wondering if you've seen situations where people have to replace their windows to meet the HERS rating.
Okay, so, yeah, it happens sometimes. If you're – it depends on how – what the ratio is to the size of your house versus, it also depends on how old the windows are.
Right.
You know, I think there are, you have all these different things going on. But if you have a really old drafty house with double hung windows and those big old weight pockets on either side of them,
yes.
which, you know, they're not just, it's not just that the window itself is old, but it's that the whole assembly is going to make the house perform really poorly.
Yes.
Your walls may have the right amount of insulation, but your blower door test is going to get a really low number, and that's a really high number. Mm-hmm. And that's going to mess up your overall HERS rating.
Can you explain a blower door test?
Yeah. So it used to be back in the days of construction that we never cared about how drafty a house was, which is ridiculous because every old builder would tell you that if you want your house to be comfortable, you have to get rid of all those drafts.
Yeah, except they dry out all the water management you haven't done correctly. So
okay, fine. But you'll never go to a log cabin where people don't spend time every year, you know, chinking it in and just getting it so there are no or minimal drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And what blower door testing does is it gives you the chance to get a numerical value on how many drafts are coming into a house.
Right.
The new energy code mandates that we take every house we're doing a HERS rating on and test it for draftiness.
Mm-hmm.
So that is affected in a massive way by those weight pockets around the windows.
Yes,
is
there for anything,
All right, so I'm a big proponent of saving the old windows. Is there a way to, and we can do that through weather stripping and a state-of-the-art storm. What can one do about a weight pocket?
Weight pockets. So there are so many different strategies that have been out since, you know, I've seen publications on how to fix weight pockets from the 1960s.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the really fun things you can do if you are a do-it-yourselfer is you can take the trim off the window from the inside or the outside, put a piece of PVC into that weight pocket so it gives a conduit space for the weight pocket to ride up and down.
Okay.
So you want to keep your weight pocket.
I mean, the weight goes up and down.
The weight can go
the PVC.
Inside the PVC,
and then
you can
a sealed unit.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
how
I've never
old
seen
house
that.
Can you get?
That's so great.
That's sweet. Okay, so you would you join me in there being some arguments for saving old windows, or would you prefer that I just capitulate to the replacement of the old windows?
I think that. Old windows there are some old windows which should be gotten rid of because they're just so ugly. They don't belong there.
Mm-hmm.
There are some which are just so beautiful that it kills you to get rid of it, especially when the glass begins to sag.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
it's a liquid.
Right?
Glass is a liquid, even when it's stiff. Anyway, so you're saying.
And there are great window restoration companies out there.
Yes, so I was just going to say, we can do a beautiful job.
You see through to some of this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so you can use the window restorations if you're not quite there financially where you can afford the window restoration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then there's a lot you can do on your own to make your house really energy efficient. Yeah. So it's a spectrum.
It is important to say, though, that while window restoration companies don't do their work for free, let's not forget that replacing an entire window also
would be
extremely expensive.
Yeah, it's more.
All right,
thank you for
thanks for a little vote for the possibilities. And the PVC thing is great.
Yes, and storm windows being hugely impactful sort of make a huge difference. But anyway, I was going to say that, you know, if you're replacing your window fully, then you're taking off all the trim around the window. You're pulling the window out. You're putting the new one in. You're reflashing. You're plaster patching, you're putting the trim back on, you're painting. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive. So yeah. doing you know, a restoration, where you're, especially if you're restoring the sashes, the part that move, where a lot of the leakage occurs, that's less than doing a whole new window. Now, replacement windows, which as we've discussed on other podcasts, are where you're leaving the trim and you're leaving the jamb, which is sort of the box that the slidey bits go up and down in, then you can get better performance and it's probably less expensive than restoring your windows, just in terms of the hierarchy.
But if you're doing replacement windows, you have to take the time while you've opened up. See, when you're doing a replacement window, you're always taking out those weights.
Yes.
And leaving a big box.
You're leaving a big open hole between inside and out. So you need to stop at that point in time and take that time to really seal that up nicely. And the return on that extra time spent is this infinite return, because it costs you nothing. The benefit's huge.
Yes. Good point. So in terms of customers and builders, frankly, when we're going about our business of doing a renovation, that some of the gotchas are going over 1,000 square feet. Are there any others? I've heard something about stripping back to the roof.
Gotchas meaning sort of trip wires?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Trigger points?
Yes, because what happens with renovations, of course, is that you start doing it in some way, like you're only going to do this area, mm-hmm. and then they grow sometimes. Mm-hmm. So people need to be aware, builders and homeowners.
So there are two things that are going to, right now in the stretch code, that are going to make someone have to bring their house up to new construction standards. And if you think about it from the perspective of the guys who wrote the code, what they were trying to do is say that there is a large, most of these projects are being done by investors who go and they buy mm-hmm. a piece of property and they want to update the property and they turn and sell it essentially as a new property. It's fully renovated.
Mm.
So they wanted to have, so the guys who wrote the code wanted to have ways to capture those projects, but still let people do work on their own home.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they had to figure out what was that balance. So the balance they struck was additions over 1,000 square feet
mm-hmm.
or additions that more than double the size of the existing house.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second is renovations that go over 50% of the existing house. So if you're doing something over a 50% renovation,
mm-hmm.
and renovation in this scenario doesn't mean I'm going to redo my floors and repaint my walls.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It means I'm moving walls. I'm opening it up.
Right.
I'm ripping things down to the studs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that is not normally what people think of when they think of renovations. Mostly people think of changing coverings or maybe going into your kitchen and putting new cabinetry in.
Mm-hmm.
Changing
Those
your,
don't count.
It doesn't count.
Heavy cosmetics don't count.
So right. Can I ask you, actually, this is just for my own benefit, is the definition of what constitutes renovation. I haven't found that yet in all the reading I've been doing.
Oh, so I'll tell you where to find it.
Yeah. So okay. You can know, because I guess our listeners probably don't care, so you can tell me later. But the other thing that maybe they do care
okay.
is that I thought it was for renovations over 1,000 square feet or greater than 50% of your house.
Yeah, it's really confusing.
Yeah.
So
that's why guys like you are in business,
that's right.
to deconfuse, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't get paid much to deconfuse.
yes, but you're okay,
but sorry to
valued
interrupt.
For that. Yeah.
okay, so what's going on in the process is that the code has been being massaged actively even after it was released.
Yes.
So you're seeing different versions come out.
That helps with clarity, yeah, and understanding the complexity.
So what, you know, as of 2 days ago.
Oh, my gosh.
what the code said was just the 50% rule.
Ah!
Okay, the 1,000 square feet
okay.
of renovations is not in the code anymore.
Oh, my gosh. I have people I need to email. All okay, right. Thank you.
Yeah.
What else would you like to tell us about this? Anything?
Yeah. If you're a homeowner and you're making your house more energy efficient, whether or not you have to make the entire house meet new construction standards or not, you have to remember that your house is a dynamic process, is a dynamic system, and everything you change will have additional effects to your living environment. And people forget about this. They think that if I go and I put new windows in or I insulate my attic space, that the only thing I'm getting out of this is the benefit from making the house more energy efficient. what they forget is the fact that when you make something more energy efficient, you also reduce its ability to dry.
Mm-hmm.
And houses get wet from so many different things. The biggest thing old houses get wet from is from their foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Old foundations were never damp-proofed. They were never meant to be dry.
Right.
And it was always the heating systems with all this excess energy that was going through your house that would dry them out like a
fought it back.
Mm-hmm.
Huge clothing dryer.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So we're done with that now.
Mm.
So with new energy efficient homes, all sorts of things don't work like they used to.
Well, Seth, that sort of brings us to the makeup air part of this in terms of just remember we're sealing, that their stretch coat is requiring you to seal everything up really tight. But then the houses used to be breathing, and so now they handle it a different way.
Yeah, so I mean, unfortunately, houses haven't been breathing well for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to the 1980s, and we see all the rot and all the mold,
yes.
And all of a sudden people started talking about, you know, is my house killing me? Is there all this
right.
mold growth here and there? And that was just because in the 80s, we switched over to using plywood.
Mm.
And when we started using plywood on houses, houses got ridiculously tight compared to how they were in the past.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you had this big transition that happened. But we didn't adjust with bringing in fresh air.
Right.
I want to go back even further and say, let's remember what old foundations really are.
Yes.
If you have an old foundation, you're not just building a tight house. You're building a tight house that is actively getting itself wet from all the moisture coming through the soil around your house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a fieldstone foundation or an old stone foundation, even a CMU foundation,
mm-hmm.
That's the big concrete blocks that are in your foundation. All of those are totally porous. And your house, your basement, works like a artisanal well at that mm-hmm. point. Although you're not seeing water coming and water vapor does come
sure.
there.
Yes,
it's
indeed.
It's like putting a glass bowl upside down on the dirt and watching what happens on the inside of that glass bowl.
That's exactly right.
So what do you got to say about that?
Yeah.
So you have to deal with it. Yeah.
And what's your favorite smart way to do that?
Well, it depends on what my budget is.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We do waterproofing of basements that it's like putting a boat in the ground.
Okay.
We get we've never had a failure. So that's how we do
that's
it when
way.
We're doing putting expensive stuff in the basement.
Okay. But you have to remember that's not something that the architect is going to think of.
Yeah.
Your
right.
builder has to step in and really be proactive because otherwise it screws up your whole budget.
Okay, so other than an S&H special,
right.
What else you got?
At a minimum, you got to have a really good dehumidifier going in the basement.
Yes, agreed.
Okay.
And you put one in that's piped into the drainage system. So it's not the dehumidification system of your, where you have to go down there and dump out the bucket.
Never use those.
A big, honking, powerful one that drains and you don't have to think about.
Yeah.
I still have a question about this roof thing. So
okay.
is it a rumor? Maybe it's rumor and innuendo in the builder community. But I thought there was something where if you expose the sheathing of your roof, you're taking off. It says something about if you're putting more shingles on top of your existing shingles, that, of course, that doesn't impact your energy requirements. But if you're stripping them all off and you get back to sheathing, I believe I read that you have to get that roof up to code, which is R60, better known as a lot of insulation. Is that true?
So the original stretch code back in 2009.
Yes.
Had two interesting items in it that no one really ever enforced.
Mm-hmm.
But the two items were that if you exposed the sheathing of your roof or you exposed the sheathing of your sidewalls, that you have to take that opportunity to insulate them underneath them
mm-hmm.
In your sidewall. So you're changing the siding on the house. Now you have to drill and fill with cellulose.
Right.
Right? 'Cause it's open. You're not damaging anyone's siding at that point.
Right.
And with your roof, if there's a cavity there that you can't access from the inside, you have to take that opportunity to drill it from the outside,
so
just
like
your roof.
A cathedral ceiling.
A cathedral non-insulated ceiling.
Non-insulated ceiling.
Which
are pretty rare.
Are really rare.
Right. Yeah. So it would have to have nothing in it. It was. Oh, so what is it now? I'm interrupting you. Keep going.
So that's, I don't think that's still in the stretch code right now.
You don't
now.
Think it's still in the stretch code? Yeah. Okay. We'll have a sidebar. On that.
Yeah, we can take a look at the stretch code again. I think they took that line item out because it was never really enforced anyhow.
Well, since you told me that it changed 2 days ago, my confidence has gone down even further that I understand stretch code.
Who does the enforcement before we say?
Yeah.
So the author of the stretch code is someone from the Department of Energy Resources, but the enforcement is through the BBRS.
Which is?
Which is the building, I don't know, the building inspectors.
Okay. The building inspectors. They're the ones who decide.
Local. The local building inspectors do the enforcement.
Got it.
But this is new. So it just happened about, I guess, for the first time, January 1st of 2023, that the code was being written by someone who wasn't a building inspector.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is that good or bad? Yes, Bruce. No, is that good or bad?
So it's interesting. I think that the group trying to do this is really pushing hard to help Massachusetts achieve their goal of being net zero by 2050.
Mm-hmm.
That's the law now that we have to, the whole state in every part of the state has to be at net zero by 2050. But it's a real slog to get there. It's not going to be an easy trip.
Okay.
So they're trying it.
So I think, if I may say, from our perspective, the truth is the building inspector decides. So what you have to do is make sure you're talking to them to get, and you get different answers from different inspectors, and even within a town. And that's because it's fairly new. So everyone's grappling with this, trying to understand it. But the truth is, as a homeowner, make sure that the questions are getting asked to the inspector before the hammer starts swinging.
Yeah. And because the code keeps changing, you're going to hear different answers for the time being.
That's right.
Forever. Until 2050. And we'll have all of our problems solved. So all of this stuff has varying financial impacts on a homeowner. Where's the state or other authorities in terms of taking the edge off financially?
So it starts with the federal government.
Okay.
There's a tax credit that you can apply for every year, I think for the next 10 years.
Okay.
To pay for energy efficiency items. It pays for something like 30% of the materials with a cap somewhere in between $2,000 and
$3,000.
Okay. Yeah. It's not a huge number, but it's a number.
I'll take it.
Right. So that's a tax credit. And I think everybody should have in mind, every homeowner should say, hey, let me come up with a schedule of projects I can do a little bit every year and take advantage of those. Why not? And then statewide, when you're doing different types of projects, there are a menagerie of different rebate programs. Your HERS rater, if you have a HERS rater on your project, should know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you have to be familiar with the different programs and what the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
But you are always looking out on all of your projects to see which one your clients can fit into. It's good to know, though, that the way these programs work is federal and state may overlap, mm-hmm. but within the state, you're not going to find two programs that overlap. You can't double dip inside of the state.
Mm-hmm. Ben, tell us where we can find you.
You can find us at greenstampco.com.
Great. Thank you so much for talking to us about this really interesting topic and changing. It's wonderful to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to learn more about SNH Construction, you can find us at shconstruction.com.
And if you want to learn more about my services, I'm at bruceirving.biz, B-I-Z.